The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson, and Coach Rankings Week rolls on. Our thanks to Stephen Prather of Sports Source Analytics. If you have not checked out that show, do that after this. It serves as a fine compliment to our entree that we have. Gentlemen, the Coach Rankings are live. Let the yelling commence. And Tom, I'm going to come to you first because you... You actually have to deal with the blowback from fans who probably think that even though this was a consensus operation with many experts, that these are your personal rankings and you have personally offended them all.
Oh, yes. I've already seen it a few times since I posted the original rankings yesterday. And in my original tweet, I made sure to point out that I was one of several voters. And of course, immediately there are like five replies that are like, why, you know, this guy should be higher. There's even one that's like, Tom Fornelli has Kansas State's Chris Kleeman ranked here. See where he has. It's like, okay, I'm one of seven voters. Please stop yelling at me.
Way too much nuance, Tom.
I mean, it's like, I pretty much hit everybody over the head with just a voter. I wrote it, but I'm just a voter.
Are you getting like aggregated by the Kansas City Star? Is like CBS Sports is Tom Fornelli says this.
Probably. I haven't seen that, but there was just one Kansas State like fan site that said, see where Tom Fornelli has, you know, Chris Kleeman ranked. I was just like, come on, guys.
Barton, are you sad that you miss out on all this opportunity to just get dragged through the off season hate trolling?
Yeah, no, especially because you're going to probably be called on radio and asked to defend a ranking as if it's yours. Those are the worst.
Radio hits today.
You have to like real time explain like no offense, bud. Like I had this guy ranked higher actually.
Yeah, no, I've got three radio hits scheduled for today already.
So before we get into debating, we've got all of us have our own ballots. There is the final 1 through 65, which is up on CBS Sports right now. And so we're going to start with, I want to hear everyone's approach to how you got this, because we're ranking all the Power 5 coaches. This is about as subjective as it gets. Everyone gets to choose their own formula, and I think that there's a lot of differences between across our entire voting body. A lot of people approach this differently. A lot of people value and weigh different factors more than others. So Barton, let's first for you. I mean, how'd y'all? What was your method to ranking the coaches?
It's real simple for me. I'm an athletic director or a fan, whatever you want to call it, and I have a program that I back, support, hire for, and my order, my ranking is basically just a big board. It's would I hire the number one ranked coach above every other coach? Would I replace the number two coach with the number three coach? If the answer is no, then my ranking is right. If the answer is yes, then I need to flip those guys. And so with that approach, I feel like, yeah, I'm weighing their previous success. But if I believe in a guy with limited body of work, I can just subjectively say, you know what? I think this guy's pretty good. I know he doesn't have the plaques on the wall that someone else might, but I've seen what he's done the last couple of years. And I included in that is all the other stuff, recruiting, team building, you know, that sort of thing is a factor in if I'm an AD and I'm making it higher. So yeah, if you're ranked 55th on my list, then there's 54 guys that I'd call before I hired you.
What was yours, Tom?
I mean, I take a little bit of that approach, thinking about who I would want if I'm either the fan of the school or if I'm the guy making the hire. But I also put a lot more consideration into what the coach has actually done. So it's like you'll see in my rankings compared to where guys finish, there's some guys that I think if I was hiring, they might only have been around for 2 or 3 years of like having real, you know, Power Five experience that I might hire instead of a guy who's been around for 20 years and done more. But when it comes to ranking, I'm not going to rank a guy who's only had a couple seasons under his belt higher than a dude who maybe has been doing it for 20 years and has multiple conference titles. But I mean, it's like a blend. And I feel like you said it's subjective. And it's like, for me, I feel like when you're ranking these 65 coaches, at 1 and 2, you have Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney. And after that, whatever you want is defensible. I just feel like as long as you have those two as your top two right now, everything else is logical and defendable.
Is it defensible to have any order of those top two?
Yeah, I had Saban at number one, and I think that's probably the quote unquote correct answer. But I think it's if at this point, I mean, Dabo's beaten Saban 2 of the last 3 years in the title game.
Yeah,
I think it's defensible to have him at number one.
I had Saban at 1-2, but I think it's very defensible at this point to have Dabo at one. Because, I mean, I think you can make a really good argument that Dabo should be one.
I'm just saying Nick Saban never threw a pizza party for all of Bryant-Denny Stadium. Bonus True. Points. I found that since we're doing this every year, I feel like my opinions on these are volatile. And it's not necessarily exactly recency bias, but I feel like I was ranking them almost in terms of stocks. And there were some coaches where what they had done in the past or what they had going on in terms of their resume or their profile was what anchored their rankings. But then there were other ones where it was a trajectory a prediction where it's like, man, I don't know. I really like what this coach has going. You know, I found myself dropping some coaches because of what we saw in 2018 on the field. And that, you know, that might have been an over adjustment, but the volatility was probably the thing that stood out to me because, you know, I'm shooting these coaches based on what my last year ballot is, like up and down, maybe like 12 to 15 spots. And Tom, that probably goes back to the fact that while we list them 1 through 65, the truth is it's just a giant blob of a bunch of coaches that are tied for 22nd.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's like, I feel like when I was doing mine, the top 10 guys were pretty easy to figure out. And then from 10 to 20, it was a little more difficult, but I kind of knew exactly who I wanted and where. And then pretty much from that point on, it's like you're really starting to split hairs. I feel like the top and the bottom of the list are easy. And everything probably between 20 and maybe even 50, you're just kind of like, well, you know, there's an argument for every single one of those guys to flip spots because it's so close.
I mean, inherently, you are a head football coach at a Power Five program.
Yeah, you can't.
You have like, succeeded at something along the way in order to get here. Yeah, just minimum entry is a good thing. Being 64th on this list is okay. You've got a Power Five job,
and you're a multimillionaire.
Yeah,
you're doing all right.
Well, let's start right there at the top of that list, real quick. Let's see, Nick Saban at one, as we mentioned on the consensus list. Our number two is Dabo Swinney, and our number three, Chris Peterson from Washington. Our number four, Lincoln Riley, and that's where I want to stop. Oh, number five, Jimbo Fisher, because the Lincoln Riley ranking, Tom, goes back to what you were saying. I'm guessing Lincoln Riley was not as high on your list if you were weighing what you have done over time.
Yeah, I had Riley at 8.
Okay.
And it's I mean, so it's not like I had him way off. I mean, last year he was at 15. I think I had him ranked in the 20s last year because I was still in the, hey, it's only been one season, guys. But I think it's hard to argue with what he's done in the 2 years that he's probably pretty good. It's just at the same time, it's not like he inherited a program that was a mess. He inherited a pretty good situation from Bob Stoops, and he's done a really, really good job with it. And I think if I'm taking the Barton approach where I'm just listing these guys in the order of who I'm going to hire right now, he's probably at number three. But if I'm doing with my ranking style where I'm also taking into account like what they've accomplished over the long run, I had him lower at number eight. But I'm not surprised to see him climb this high because, I mean, he's been there 2 years. He's won the Big 12 twice. He's been to the playoff twice. And he's produced two Heisman winners, two different Heisman winners in two seasons. It's a pretty good resume he's built really quickly.
And the Barton method does, in fact, spit out Lincoln Riley as the number three best coach in college football. Because and not only that, but he is now, so he's got this ridiculous offense that is, I mean, you can't even make an argument that it's not among the best in college football, that he's not one of the best offensive minds in college football and one of the best quarterback gurus in college football. But now he's gone out and he's hired one of the hottest names in college football on the defensive side of the ball as a defensive coordinator. So that doesn't automatically pencil them in as a good defense, but at least it's a power move, and he's shown the ability to sort of shake up his staff and strive for improvements on that side of the ball. So I think this is it's hard to see him jumping from number three on my list for next year, but he's going to start knocking on the door of that top two, I think, if he keeps this trajectory.
I also have Lincoln Riley as number three on my list, but I also have Chris Peterson, our consensus three, as my number four. And I feel like that is an example where you can lean on the Boise State consistency, but I think what he has done at Washington, especially in terms of player development and making that the best program in the Pac-12, I think the Washington profile alone gives Chris Peterson top five, top six consideration. And if you want to give Boise State bonus points out there, then I would even hear a Chris Peterson over Lincoln Riley. But as I've been more stuck in recency bias, I was Riley over Peterson myself.
Yeah, but also the other thing about Peterson versus Riley is if we're right here living in the moment, and I guess you could credit Peterson for building Washington up a little quicker or having a tougher job to sort of build Washington up than what Lincoln Riley inherited at Oklahoma. But when Chris Peterson has gotten into the big matchups, the playoff matchups, his teams have been totally overmatched. Whereas Lincoln Riley has nearly knocked off Alabama and Georgia the last 2 years.
Good point.
So that's kind of where I gave the edge to Lincoln. And I think, Jonathan Smith, we need to see if this is going to be an interesting year for Washington, because we need to find out if Jonathan Smith was a bigger piece of that puzzle than maybe we all gave him credit for, because Bush Hamden to this point as offensive coordinator has left a little bit to be desired. So I'd like to see their offense take a step forward this year and show that they're not sort of plateauing on that side of the football.
Number five, we mentioned Jimbo Fisher. Number six, Kirby Smart. Seven, Brian Kelly. Eight, Gary Patterson. Nine, David Shaw. 10, Dan Mullen. Any one there that stand out to you against your own rankings?
Brian Kelly took a huge leap forward this year compared to where he was last year.
I know. Where was he in last year's ranking consensus?
Last year he was ranked 27th.
Yeah, I had him 37th. In my rankings last year, and I had him eighth this year, and I kind of can't, like, looking back, it's hard to remember the mind place I was in to thinking that Brian Kelly was that low on the list. But man, we must have been really down on Notre Dame heading into this year.
Yeah, I had him at 18th on mine this year, so even I was still pretty low on him compared to where he ended up finishing. So somebody had him really high.
I had him right at seven.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know where I had him last year, but I think Brian Kelly's a really good coach.
I do too. It's just there's so many 8-5 seasons mixed in that for me to get him that high, I'd like to see more consistency. Now, granted, he's taken Notre Dame to the BCS title game, and this year they went 12-0 in the regular season and reached the college football playoff. So clearly, when things go right, when he has everything clicking, the ceiling is pretty high for Notre Dame. It's just there's been too many seasons in between where they're just, you know, they're good, but they're not like what anybody I think would consider elite. I think they're a very good team on the whole with that capability of having elite seasons. So for me to get him in the top 10, I'd like, you know, I think he's trending that way because what they've won at least 10 games three of the last 4 years. So right. I think if he keeps that up and we keep continue to see Notre Dame being the team that's actually competing for a playoff spot every year, okay, then I think he deserves this ranking. But just right now, I think this is a little too high. But again, you're splitting hairs even at this point.
I'm giving Brian Kelly bonus points for what I have viewed as him being able to, you know, withstand staff turnover, for him being able to, you know, go from the offensive minded coach and the, you know, pulling quarterbacks in and out, and it seemed like there was a lot of meddling, you know, as many as 7, 8, 9 years ago. And so this is where I think Brian Kelly, the really good football coach, I think that he has grown, or at least his profile has grown a little bit to include being able to run a good program, to get the strength and conditioning sorted out, to be able to be a little bit more of that overseer as he's hit this point in his career, where he probably doesn't, you know, he probably should be delegating a little bit more and trying to maintain sort of the big picture. I mean, I remember Brian Kelly, he caught all that flack for feeling like he had to go out on speaking tours.
Yes.
like he does have a very unique job being the head football coach at Notre Dame and having been there for so long and established at least a pretty high floor. Obviously the 4-8 season being overlooked there, but I think Brian Kelly will finish his career at Notre Dame, and I think Brian Kelly probably is going to be in the top 10 to 15 of these rankings over the next couple years as he finishes out his career.
Yeah, I even wrote in my bubble, my assessment of it, I said, I'm probably, with my ranking compared to everybody else's, I'm probably the one who's more wrong in their assessment of Kelly. It's just for me, I had other coaches that I prefer.
Not listed in that top 10 were two guys that I have in my top 10 that I appear to have much higher than the consensus. Anybody want to guess what one of them is?
Tom Herman.
That is one. I have Tom Herman at 10, and the consensus has Tom Herman at 17. I got another one that you might be able to guess that's even lower than Tom Herman in the consensus.
Matt Campbell?
Scott Frizzy.
Okay. Of course.
I have Frost at 7.
Wow.
Like, is that just I'm just crushing too hard? And
I think, yeah,
yes.
A little bit.
Yes, absolutely. And that's okay. And that's why we send out lots of ballots. We need lots of flavor here. But that is
here, so like this is sort of my point and the way I approach the rankings. I'm just going to pull up the consensus list. So for my Scott Frost, if you're Texas and you could hire Scott Frost or you could hire Gary Patterson, would you, like, is it a no-brainer you'd hire Gary Patterson?
Yes.
Really? Okay. I wouldn't. If you are Oklahoma and you could hire Scott Frost or you could hire Mark D'Antonio,
Frost.
See, yeah, and Mark D'Antonio was 13th in the consensus, and Scott Frost is 25th. And I just think Scott Frost is still, when you look at the trajectory, you look at what he inherited at Nebraska, how the team really looked at the end of the year. I know the record was ugly, but
they started 0-6 and finished 4-2.
Yeah, they finished 4-2, and they started 0-6, and among that 0-6, there were some really, like, weird close losses, and he recruits well. He's, I mean, The one time we've seen him before when he took a winless team to whatever it was, four wins to undefeated in year two, I don't think there's any reason to think he can't take a jump in year two at Nebraska. I just think if you are actually looking at it from a sort of big picture standpoint and not just looking at a record from last year, I still think there's a lot to like about having Scott Frost as the guy that runs your program and the guy that you sort of entrust in the future of your program. I feel good. Like, I wonder what whatever the Nebraska win total is this year. I'm going to be on the over, I would imagine. You know,
Barton, I would imagine too. I would also imagine you are going to be on the Nebraska win total over.
My Scott Frost is Mike Gundy, who finished at 12th in our rankings, but I had 5 on my ballot because I love Mike Gundy more than anybody in the world.
You do? Why?
I really do.
So like, back it up.
I mean, it's strange doing it considering Oklahoma State came off a 7-6 season last year to still have him that high. It's just I've been very high on Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State and what he's done the entire time that he's been there with, you know, because first of all, no matter what, Oklahoma State's automatically the number two program within its own state. And it's not like it's a big time program or has a big time history. It was a solid to a solidly above average program for years until Mike Gundy showed up. And now all of a sudden they're winning 10 games seemingly every year, except, you know, once in a while they put in like a 7-6 like last year or an 8-5. But he's got 121-59-14 seasons there, and that's 85-32 over the last 9 years. So over the last 9 years, he's averaging like 9.5 wins a year. That's pretty dang good for Oklahoma State. And I feel like Mike Gundy's the kind of guy, if you put him at a larger program with more resources, and I don't mean money-wise because obviously T. Boone Pickens has plenty of money, but if you put him at an SEC school or a Big Ten school with, like, you know, a more of a blue blood type nature, more of an attractive brand, I think he would win a lot of games. Like, if Tennessee had ever ended up hiring Mike Gundy, I think Tennessee's right there with Georgia as the second best team or the top team in the SEC East right now. And Dan Mullen's trying to catch up to Tennessee and Georgia, not just Georgia.
So I don't disagree. And I like Mike Gundy too. I have him as a top 20 coach. But to have him 5, then my argument would be, are you saying that, like, we don't know what Oklahoma State would be without somebody else, like with somebody else. He's been there since 2005. So is 10 wins the ceiling for Oklahoma State? Or if Lincoln, put someone that you would have behind him. If Dan Mullen was at Oklahoma State, would they have gotten above 10 wins by now?
Yeah, but I think Dan Mullen would have the same kind of success at Oklahoma State that he had at Mississippi State, where
if you think those are comparable jobs, I would argue Mississippi State's a tougher job than Oklahoma State. I don't disagree with, like, being bullish on Mike Gundy. I don't want to paint that. I think 5 is higher than I would go, but it's an interesting case study because, like, we're just assuming that Mike Gundy is so much better than what everyone else would do at Oklahoma State because no one else has been at Oklahoma State for 15 years. But I do think Mike Gundy's really good.
We've all got our crushes. And for me this year, it's Bronco Mendenhall, number 9 on my ballot.
9.
9.
What? All right.
I mean, he does coach my beloved Hoos, so it's, you know, I respect it. I had him. Let me see where I had Bronco. I mean, I love Bronco teams. I had Bronco at 24 on my ballot.
So I think
had Bronco at 24 too.
And I think you finished 26, right, Tom? Does that sound on the consensus?
Yeah, he finished just outside the top 25. So somebody was disrespecting
Bronco.
Yeah,
if we both had him 24, Chip had him 9, then someone must have had him in like the 40s.
So, I mean, and I think that there was just sort of a general, you know, this much consistency at BYU, you know, all that is taken into consideration. But Virginia football was a mess. And I think that what he's done over these last 3 years is long lasting. And I think that he has done some, like, big time, oh man, just just hit the cliche machine, but like he has done some big time like program building and culture changes that have made me believe that this is going to be, and Virginia has this like, you know, once every 15 to 20 years, Virginia's going to cycle up and they're going to have a couple years where they're a little bit of a problem, at least among other regional ACC rivals. And I think Bronco's the kind of coach that can do that. I think it's a really, really good fit for him. And when you're able to not only be a football coach and, you know, a little bit of the player developer, but the program developer, I think that that's a, like, 9 is absolutely too high for Bronco Mendenhall. But I've just been really blown away by what he's been able to put in place there. And I just don't think that it's going to change anytime soon.
So I think Bronco is a victim of his personality a little bit in terms of like these sort of rankings, because he's clearly a good football coach, like in the most football guy like sense of the term football coach. Like he's good at it. He's good at developing. He's good at scheming. He's good at just producing a team that's going to be a classic kind of football team. Yeah, he's also clearly good at evaluating. He can, you know, he can find really good players under rocks. He can do it at programs that aren't necessarily traditionally producing. But he's just like, his personality is so quirky and he's so aloof. Like if you put David Shaw's personality into Bronco Mendenhall, or I don't know, Dabo Sweeney into Bronco Mendenhall, I bet you there'd be a 10 spot bump in his consensus ranking. I just think he just sort of is this, he kind of works in these shadows and no one really knows what to make of him. But when you play him, you know you're in for a dogfight.
It's like, imagine if he gets Virginia to a point where it's in contention for a playoff spot and then he's got to start going on ESPN to campaign. that would be fun to watch.
He needs.
That's just not his personality.
I mean, he still needs to beat Virginia Tech. I do. Yeah. I'm very aware of what they have, but this is as close as Virginia has gotten to getting Virginia Tech in a long time. And they have closed. This is as small as the gap has been. And he took a team that, even by his own admission, did not have, like, half of the roster was not ACC caliber players when he showed up. And so this has been very much an effort to be able to get it all moving in the right direction. So
Bronco and Tom Herman were my two biggest jumps. From Tom Herman went from last year 30th to 10th. Bronco went from 44th last year to 24th. So he's heading in the right direction in the Barton Simmons index.
Do y'all have any coaches that, looking at your own ballots, you have any regret about where they stand, or you feel like you might have been, you can look at your own ballot and admit maybe you're a little bit too high or a little bit too low on a coach?
Well, I mean, I already admitted I'm probably too high on Gundy, but other than that, no, I mean, I don't hate anyone in my ranking as I go back and look. I mean, personally, I would have liked to have ranked Jeff Brohm a little higher, because, you know, that's my guy, but I feel like I had him at 25th on my ballot, but I feel like that's where he probably should be in that range. But if it was just up to me being who I like the most, he probably would have been top 10.
Where did you guys go with I'm curious Jim Harbaugh, and I'm also curious where you guys went with the Jim Harbaugh versus James Franklin pecking order.
I have them right next to each other.
Same.
I do too.
I have Harbaugh at 12 and Franklin at 13.
Yeah, I have Harbaugh at 11 and Franklin at 12.
Yeah.
I have this Big Ten cluster. It goes almost directly in order. D'Antonio, Harbaugh, Frost, Fitzgerald, Franklin, Gundy, Paul Christ.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like, you know, there are no Big Ten coaches in our top 10 of the final ballot. But from 10 to 20, there's, you know, from 10 to 25, especially even on my ballot, there's quite a cluster of them. But I had the highest ranked Big Ten coach I had on my ballot was Pat Fitzgerald. I had him ahead of both Harbaugh and Franklin.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
Because you give him the, you give him the points for what he's done at where he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I wrote in the article, he finished, where did he finish in our rankings? He finished at 16th, and it's like I wrote, it's the best way to sum up what Fitzgerald's done is that Northwestern's won 19 games over the last two seasons, 36 in the last four, won a Big Ten West title, and it doesn't feel like a major story. And it's because of what he's done since he got there with what Northwestern historically had been and in his time there. Now, when Northwestern wins 10 games, you're just like, yeah, that's kind of what they do sometimes. Whereas before, it would have been like, you know, it'd been like front page story if we still had front page stories.
What do you do with Paul Christ?
I had Christ at 17 or 16.
He dropped all the way from 14 to 27 for me this year. I was kind of down on him this year because when you look at like he was average at Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple good seasons the last couple years at Wisconsin, but then
entering the third year when it's mostly his team, there was a drop off. Yeah,
not only that, but definitely like we were supposed to. I mean, in Big Ten media days, there was all this discussion about like, oh, you know, you're the quarterback guru, and we can't wait to see what Alex Hornibrook is now, finally under year three with you. And like, you get Jonathan Taylor back, and there's the offensive line speaks for itself. And then you look up, and they had a very average year. And so as a head coach, how long was he at Pitt? 3-4 years? He's basically got like five average years and two good ones. And so I think that Paul Christ, we got a little ahead of ourselves on him, and for good reason. I mean, I get the opinion last year, and he's still a good coach, but I think this is an important year for him to reassert himself because the competition is picking up a little bit in that Big Ten West. He's not quite going to go uncontested like he used to. So now you better be able to step your game up a little bit.
He's got three double-digit win seasons in 4 years at Wisconsin, four straight bowl wins, and two top 10 finishes.
Where does that put him? I mean, I'm not saying like, are you saying that's really good? I mean, it is good, but is it that elite?
I mean, I do not think it's elite. I was wondering if Paul Christ is basically like settling into a Kirk Ferentz role among the coach rankings where you're like, oh yeah, no, he's really good. He's good. But you're just not going to be up there cracking him into the top 10, top 15.
For me, the difference is for me, and what makes Wisconsin or Christ so hard to evaluate is that it's hard to separate. Is it Wisconsin or is it Christ?
Mm-hmm. Right,
because with what Barry Alvarez did there, I mean, the formula is in place. Alvarez built it up. Bielema took it over and pretty much maintained it. Gary Anderson showed up, tried to change things a little bit. They got rid of him quickly because they didn't want anyone messing with the formula. Christ comes
in. But he was still really good.
Yeah, Gary Anderson was still good. They just didn't like he was changing things up.
Yeah.
Christ comes in, starts going back to what, you know, the quote-unquote Alvarez way, and he's had success. And last year they had a down year, and maybe last year was just a down year. But for me, there's that whole thing where when it came to evaluating him or just coming in general evaluating him, I have difficulty trying to figure out, like I said, is it Paul Christ or is it just the Wisconsin program?
Or is it possible that there is no difference because Paul Christ is so damn Wisconsin?
I mean, he is literally from Madison.
He played quarterback for the Badgers. Yeah. He's a coach's son. He is so Wisconsin.
Yeah. Whereas you mentioned like in comparison to Ferentz where he could be having that kind of run where they're just who they are. But for me, I mean, I know Hayden Fry clearly is the, you know, the Barry Alvarez of Iowa, but I feel like Ferentz has just been at Iowa for so long that to me, no matter what Hayden Fry's history is at Iowa and what he did for the program, to me, Kirk Ferentz is Iowa.
We'll be breaking down some more of our biggest surprises, including where we ranked a head coach at one of the Blue Bloods right after this.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So we have not mentioned the name of the Ohio State Buckeyes head football coach. Where'd y'all have Ryan Day?
My philosophy is this. When it comes to ranking these coaches, like I said, I do consider who I would hire today, but if you don't really have a lot of experience, like have been the head coach for, let's say, 3 games, you're not going to be high on my rankings.
Ryan Day last on your list?
No. No, he's at 62nd, though. I had him ahead of Mike Locksley, Manny Diaz, and Mel Tucker. Because he's 3-0, yes, but he's only coached 3 games. So I have no idea. I'm not going to rank him ahead of anybody. I think he's in a better situation than
that. That is such a cop out, Tom. So basically you just like pencil in the guys that don't have head coaching experience at the bottom of the list. So you don't even have to really consider where you would place them in the pecking order. You just snuck out the back door on those guys.
Oh, that's sort of using logic. I mean, if I'm ranking a coach based on who he's been as a coach and he's never been a head coach, how the hell can I pretend I know what he's going to be like as a head coach?
Well, because you're the expert. You're supposed to be educating all the commoners.
Yes, an expert knows what he knows and what he doesn't. And an expert knows that the guy's never been a head coach.
Well, in my very expert opinion, he is very specifically the 23rd best head coach in all of college football.
Spicy.
That win over Oregon State really impressed you.
I mean, yeah, like it's a very much a guess with Ryan Day. I guess I'm just sort of trusting his incredible list of references. You know, he got a bunch of recommendation letters from a bunch of people that seem to be raving about this dude. I think he appears to be, he knows offense. I think the offense has evolved under him. And I think that he's made some strong moves on his staff this offseason. It's a top 20. He appears to be a top 25 type of guy. He could be better. He could be worse. This isn't like, I don't know, like, I guess Ed Orgeron, we had some sort of a sense on who he was before that. But this doesn't feel like Ohio State's going to go away anytime soon under Ryan Day. It does. I don't necessarily have any confidence that he is the next Urban Meyer, but there's enough just contextual hints that he's still pretty dang good, and Ohio State's still going to be a Big Ten champion contender, if not a college football playoff contender.
Yeah, of all the first-year coaches, he's clearly stepping into the best situation. And he could easily be a top 25 guy on my ballot next year just based off of what he's walking into and what he's able to do with it. But I wonder if with Ryan Day, are we going to consider him his own case 3 years from now, or is it going to be comparing him to what Urban Meyer did? So I think that's going to be the interesting thing when it comes to evaluating Ryan Day as Ohio State's coach.
I split the difference with you guys. I've got Ryan Day at 43, and for context, that has him right behind Scott Satterfield and Neil Brown, and right ahead of Ed Orgeron and Derek Mason.
So who is y'all's number one first year addition of this list? So a guy that wasn't a Power Five coach last year.
For me, it is, let me see here.
Mine's Diaz, right? Like just in the same neck of the woods. I've got Diaz at 38.
Manny Diaz has never been a head coach. I have Scott Satterfield at 36, just one spot ahead of Matt Wells.
My number one new head coach to this list is Ryan Day at 23, but my number two one is Chris Klieman at Kansas State. I have him 34th.
Wow.
I mean, like,
I think that's defensible because he's won multiple national titles. It's just he did it at the FCS level.
Yeah, he did it. And yes, there is a strong culture in place at North Dakota State. And so, but at the same time, winning four national championships in 5 years in high school, in middle school, I don't know, in D3, anywhere is hard. And he did it four times in 5 years at North Dakota State. And I don't know the dynamics of FCS recruiting well enough, but I can't fathom that North Dakota State is some sort of Alabama of Division I in terms of their ability to out-recruit other FCS programs. I think that they develop as well. And so, I can't figure out why there was ever any sort of hesitation or concern from like Kansas State fans about hiring him. I guess we'll find out. Maybe they're right, but he sure seems like he has the right kind of resume to me.
Yeah, and I think that that's the thing about Klieman. When you look at his resume, yes, he inherited a very good situation at North Dakota State as far as, you know, the FCS level. But we've seen a lot of coaches inherit good situations and not be able to maintain it. He's clearly maintained it. So it's that's to me is a good sign for his ability to get to Kansas State and, you know, at least keep them on the same level they've been under Bill Snyder.
Craig Bohl went 33-2 in his last 3 years at North Dakota State with three straight national championships. And at Wyoming, he is 28-35. I think using Craig Bohl as the example is what had me putting Chris Klieman near the bottom with a can be proven wrong, willing to be proven wrong, and for the sake of Kansas State football and, you know, have whatever intra fighting might happen there, I hope Chris Klieman is successful. But I think that what we have seen recently says that just because, you know, and Craig Bohl's doing that in the Mountain West. And to think that you're going to be able to jump into the Big 12 and be able to continue those winning ways, I think that right now he would have to prove me wrong on that one. And that's why I've got him in that group near the bottom of the rankings.
Yeah, I don't have him. I've got him ranked in the 50s, but I don't think that, I mean, comparing Wyoming to Kansas State, I don't think that's fair.
Because Kansas State is just a better program.
It's a Power Five program.
Right.
I mean, it's yeah, you're not exactly in a fertile recruiting ground in either place, but there's more football being played in the state of Kansas than there is in Wyoming. I mean, at least you've got all the junior colleges there, which is what Bill Snyder was able to take great advantage of. I think that with Klieman's recruiting, you know, at North Dakota State, he's recruited that area. you know, he's been recruiting in the Midwest. He knows, you know, he knows where he can go to find guys that might be a little bit under the radar and get him to come to Kansas State. I don't think that if you're Craig Bull at Wyoming, that's Wyoming is not an easy place to recruit to.
So it's a personnel difference you think makes it makes that evidence erroneous?
Not erroneous, but I think you should consider it. I just don't think that it's a fair comparison as far as, well, if Craig Bull has had this much trouble at Wyoming after having so much success at North Dakota State, Chris Klieman's going to have the same kind of problems at Kansas State. I think that it's a very different situation because, I mean, one's a Power 5 gig and one is Wyoming.
Fair. I definitely was approaching it more from, you can't automatically assume that FCS success is going to translate to the next level.
No, you definitely can't do that. But if there's any FCS success that I think you can look at, it's the one who's won multiple national titles.
Oh, you mean like Craig Bull?
Yeah. But if Craig Bull had been in a Power 5 program, I bet you he's better than 28-35 right now.
If Craig
goes to Minnesota, I bet you he's 35-28.
Nah, the real dirty secret is that Chris Klieman had to get out of town. He'd already used up all the goodwill that Craig Bull built up for him. It was time to go. Time to make the jump. Let's see. Where'd y'all have Herm Edwards?
I had Herm... Where'd I have Herm? I had him 46th.
I had him 50th.
No, 40. I had him 47th.
Strong.
Which was a strong improvement from the 64th the previous year.
Yes.
He was 64th in the consensus. He's moved up 10 spots to 54. I think that in this portion of the podcast, I'm willing to admit and put on record, I think Herm Edwards is going to be a decent college football coach.
Yeah. I think Herm Edwards is going to, in these rankings, if he is at Arizona State for the next 3 years, I think he will be firmly in the 38 to 50 range for the entirety of those 3 years in these rankings.
It's funny because it's like he so greatly exceeded my expectations last year, but at the same time they were only 7-6.
Right. He greatly exceeded all of our expectations. The only expectation he didn't greatly exceed is the expectations that the Arizona State athletic director has put on record that he has for that program. It's like we forget that Todd Graham was fired for mm-hmm. going 7-6. I mean that. So it's just sort of this odds. Place we're in of comparing Herm Edwards not to the expectations of Arizona State, but to the expectations of Herm Edwards. And so to this point, he's great. But how long is that going to last, I wonder?
Mm. Any other coaches that y'all want to throw out to the round table?
Yeah, there's a few, I think, interesting ones. First of all, as mentioned, these are all good coaches. They all were hired to some degree of fanfare everywhere that they were. So, which makes it kind of weird to kind of have to throw somebody in the 60s. But I'm curious just how your bottom group stacked up. Tom kind of skirts this because he just throws in the guys that don't have head coaching experience. But
he uses what he knows.
I had Clay Helton 60th. For example.
So did I.
Where'd you have him, Chip?
46.
Where was he in the consensus?
He finished higher than 60th. He finished 51st.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Dropped 20 spots.
It's not a good spot to be for USC to have a 60th worst coach. Where'd y'all have Les Miles and Mac Brown?
So those were interesting to me. I had Les Miles at 33, and then I had Mac at 32. I had them right next to each other.
I've got this badass group of old guys, Mac Brown at 51, Lovie Smith at 52, Les Miles at 53.
Yeah, I had Les at 52 as well. All right.
Here's the thing, though, with Les. A few years ago when he was the coach at LSU, he was in our top 25. Now – Is he that ranked that low because he's at Kansas, or is he just, you think he's that bad of a coach?
I think he's losing touch.
I think there's that. I mean, he seems to be border. I don't want to. I don't want to overstate.
Careful.
This. Yeah, careful. I'll go with what Chip said. I think out of touch. He seems to be getting closer and closer to being out of touch. Also, before Les Miles, there was Nick Saban at LSU, who was obviously fantastic there. We've had Les Miles now, and we've had Ed Orgeron. And I think Ed Orgeron has not been a very good head coach prior to his time at LSU. He is in the midst of being a solid head coach at LSU. I think Les Miles was generally a solid coach at LSU. What I'm getting at is, what if Ed Orgeron and Les Miles are not good coaches at all, and LSU is just that favorable of a place to recruit to and win at because of the culture, because of the environment, the talents at that program? And I just wonder if you put any coach in the top 30 at LSU if they're not contending for national titles every year. And I mean, part of me thinks that Les Miles and his sort of chokehold on that offense, particularly in the latter 5 years or so that he was there, is the only thing that held that program back. And so I think LSU is a really weird one to evaluate, and Les Miles is a really weird one to evaluate. And I think this will be fascinating to see what he does at Kansas. I don't have high expectations, but
that's the thing. It's like, I feel like it's somewhat of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because I don't have high expectations for him at Kansas either. But I feel like it's Kansas, so why should anybody have high expectations for him? No matter who's there, I don't care who Kansas would have hired. I'm not sure I would have had high expectations for him. But I don't disagree with a lot of what you guys are saying. It's just, when I came, I don't think Les Miles right now, if I'm hiring a coach right now, he's one of the top 50 names on my board. But I think that, you know, with him having won a national title and having success, I at least threw him up into the 30s. But, you know, with Ed Orgeron, like you mentioned, there is that whole thing. It's kind of like what I mentioned with Paul Christ in Wisconsin. It's hard to separate, is it LSU or is it the coach? But in Ed Orgeron's defense, who I had ranked just ahead of Les, I had Ed at 31st. He finished at 30th in our rankings, which is a 26-spot climb. If we look at recent years, since he took over at LSU, he's 25-9. If we include his time at USC, he's 31-11 in his last four seasons as a head coach. And I wonder if we take those failures at Ole Miss, which were awful years for him there, if those still weigh too heavily on how we consider Orgeron, and we don't consider the fact that, you know what, maybe everything he did wrong at Ole Miss, he's actually learned from and has improved as a coach. Because the last 4 years he's had as a head coach have been very good. They haven't been national title contender type good, but they've been much better, I think, than 30th overall.
That's fair. Barton, what has LSU done from a recruiting standpoint under Coach O? Has it gotten better? Or is it just sort of maintained LSU good?
It's sort of maintained LSU good, I think. Yeah.
Because one bonus I'll give to
There wasn't a whole lot better you could get. I mean, LSU's good. It's top five good. And it's sort of right there hovering in that range regularly still under Ed Orgeron. If you're going to take the next step up at LSU from a recruiting standpoint, you're doing what Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia stepping up, tearing up from a recruiting standpoint, from being really good to being great is what Kirby Smart has done at Georgia in their recruiting. They went from top 5 to 8 year in, year out to their sort of, you can kind of pencil them into top 3 now. That's taken it a step forward.
Is Chip Kelly too high in our rankings?
See, that's exactly what I was about to ask. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on. I think he is. I think that last year he was what? He was top 10 in our rankings last year. He finished at 9th. He's at 14 in the current rankings. Dropped 5 spots, but just from what I saw, and again, this could just be too much recency bias because, you know, UCLA was not good last year. But just from things you see and from things you hear, I wonder if, with what we were just saying about Les Miles, if the same cannot kind of be said about Chip Kelly, in that he hasn't really – college football as a whole, when you look at the offenses across the country compared to where Oregon was when Chip Kelly was there, they've caught up. They've caught on. They've adopted, and they've taken those same kind of principles and advanced them. I'm not sure Chip Kelly has advanced his own offense in any meaningful way. So it's – I don't know at this point. I'm very – I didn't – where did I have him ranked? I had him at 27th. So I didn't, you know, just completely bottom him out. But I still – I have enough concerns there that I'm like, I'm not sure Chip Kelly's all that – you know, the same guy that he was at Oregon, or if he's poised to have that same kind of success.
I had him – so I'm – contributing to his ranking on this list as what y'all are thinking might be too high, in the sense that I had him 13th. And I almost had him a lot lower than that. But I just sort of went back and made sure I got the full context here. And I mean, he's still like, yeah, I know it was 6-7 years ago now, but I mean, what he did at Oregon was ridiculous. Just ridiculous. What he did in the NFL wasn't even that bad. I mean, he had the one really bad year in San Francisco. He had two really good years in Philadelphia. And I don't even really factor that in that much into this whole process. But I just, you know, he's still like Chip Kelly is he didn't forget how to coach. And he did have a bad year in year one. But that was I think, year zero kind of year.
Yeah.
He needed to really change the culture. That was another team that got better as the year progressed. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I'll put it this way: if he was recruiting better, I would be tempted to just sort of leave him where he was. I had Scott Frost at 7 after a 4-8 year or whatever they went. I think Chip Kelly you could kind of put in the same boat in terms of the season. My concern and the reason that I was allowed him to kind of slide a little bit is I'm worried about the way he's recruiting. I think he is not engaged
mm-hmm.
and aggressive enough on that front to sort of maintain a spot in the top 10 like you have to with all those other top 10 coaches. But this is, I think, going to be a really interesting year for UCLA because I think there's a chance they go from 3-9 to 7-8 wins. It wouldn't shock me. I haven't really examined their roster. I just think – in terms of the way they've built their program and in the way the confidence I have in development, strength and conditioning and all that stuff. But if they're 4-8 again, then all of a sudden, you know, I'll plummet him because then the luster is all the way off.
Yeah, because their 2019 class finished ranked 6th in the Pac-12 and their 2020 class is currently ranked 7th. And I mean, it's if there was only some way we could still have Jim Mora doing the recruiting and then Chip Kelly doing the coaching, I think UCLA could be pretty good. But yeah, I think that's another concern too. That's what I was kind of he's not exactly a dogged recruiter from anything you hear from anybody. It's not his, you know, it's not his number, his favorite thing to do in the world.
Well, and ironically, he wasn't that bad at Oregon. He was actually, he kind of improved their recruiting at Oregon.
I also think Oregon kind of sold itself a bit though, with all the facilities.
It did, but I think the other factor is like he is – I think he just sort of is turned off of it, and now he is – he just thinks he's the smartest guy in the room and he's going to out-evaluate. And so I don't think he thinks he needs to chase because he's smarter than everybody else and he can just get guys that no one else wants who are better than the ones they do want. And that might work, but might not.
It's a dangerous thing to do. Assume you're smarter than your opponent.
I thought that's why Chip Kelly allegedly, you know, paid $25,000 for those evaluations. from Willie Lyles.
That's right. He was playing the game.
Yeah. Yes. He was like, he was a pretty good recruiter at Oregon. It's like, yes, he was. He absolutely was. Thank you, Texas Pipeline. Come on, LaMichael James. Come on, Kenyon Barner. Let's go.
Yeah.
I had him at 12, and I hate it. Like, I look back on it, and I'm like, that's too high. But it is it's almost like holding out a little bit of not hope. I mean, I don't root for Chip Kelly, but it is believing that this Chip Kelly at UCLA can be fruitful and can lead to some success and some fun and some intrigue and some storylines in a conference that can really fall below the radar. And in terms of looking at what kind of jump they might have, there is upward mobility in the Pac-12 that you do not have in the SEC, Big Ten, or the ACC.
And let's be honest, like, you guys are clearly higher on him than I am as far as the rankings are concerned. But I think if UCLA goes from, like, you know, gets to like 7 or 8 wins this year, all three of us are going to be very much on board again.
Yeah.
What do y'all do with – what you got, Barton?
Well, so I'm a little surprised at how much credit Will Muschamp still gets.
Mm.
He's 33rd in the consensus. I'm not dramatically lower. I had him, I think, 43rd.
I had him 41st.
Okay, so you're kind of on board with me. Chip, where'd you have?
For Muschamp?
8. No.
I'm so sorry. 18.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Defend yourself.
I think he's a good Muschamp
defense here.
I think that because things flamed out so horribly at Florida, we forget that he had at least one really good football team and did a pretty good job of recruiting. I think that he's a very good football coach, and I think that, like Stephen Prather said yesterday, it's tough because you wonder, like, how do you balance being just a good old ball coach and a good football, capital F football guy, football coach, with being able to run a program. And I thought that his comment may be right. Maybe it's not great to just run so hot emotionally on the sidelines and be sweating more than your players are at the end of the game. But I think South Carolina is a really good fit for him, and I think that we could see him end up coaching there for a while. And this could be a time where he sort of repairs his reputation a little bit and, you know, kind of settles into that spot where I'm definitely way too high at 18, but just the good ball coach, like, he probably deserves closer to that where I've got, like, as a 25 to 30 or 25 to 33, just kind of respect the football mind area of the rankings. And I think I respect the football mind.
I think Will Muschamp has, because he is such a central casting football coach, and is so, he's well respected, and he's got the football jargon on lock, and when he goes to the coach's film room, he's the most impressive of the bunch, and, like, everyone just sort of loves his football guy-ness. But, like, just the results have just been so mediocre. And Florida, obviously, is a place you got to win. And South Carolina is not that bad of a job, I don't think. To me, I suspect Will Muschamp is a good coach. It was all, like, last year was a real hinge year. It felt like that was the year they were supposed to have a really good season. I mean, there were 9 wins the year before. They were this sort of dark horse. Are they going to beat Georgia at home in week 2 or whatever it was? And then they just go 7-6 and they're whatever. And so that soured me a little bit, because I think, yeah, if they had a 9 or 10 win season last year, he may be in the top 15 for me. But they didn't, and then you start to look at the big picture, and you're like, all right, well, he had an 11 win season at Florida, but then other than that, you know, he won 17 games in 3 years and 19 losses, and I mean,
Well, how about this? In the same way that just getting onto this ranking at all, like being a Power 5 head coach requires some amount of success and some amount of, you've proven something to be able to get an athletic director to cut you, to write a contract that's going to cut you checks that'll total multiple millions of dollars. Will Muschamp's ceiling might just be a 500 SEC coach, but not every team can go 8-0 in the SEC. Like, you've got to have some 500 coaches in there. So I'm probably too high on him, but I think that if you're a 500 SEC coach, that probably means you're one of the 25 best coaches in the country.
Well, this is another one that's he's a little bit in the Steve Adazio world where it's like, all right, South Carolina, like it or not, you have a 7-6, 8-5 kind of coach. And you know what? That's a lot of guys wouldn't be able to go 7-6, 8-5 to South Carolina. There's a few that could do better. And so where does that put you in terms of what you want as a fan? Probably, I don't know. Are you satisfied? Most days you're happy. Most days you're winning games, but you're also still getting the leftovers from Florida and Georgia. So it's an interesting kind of predicament there.
Mm. Anyone else y'all want to turn the spotlight on before we get out of here?
Let's see. I got.
Where'd you have Mike Leach?
I had Leach 20th.
26.
23rd. Okay, so we're all pretty much in agreement there.
I wouldn't be surprised if some people had him a lot higher. But
yeah,
that's another.
There's that Leach hive. So yeah.
Yeah, but that's one again where it's like he has a ceiling,
mm-hmm.
and I can only put someone so high that has a ceiling on the field. Like he can get to 10 wins, but I have a hard time seeing him ever get to truly like playoff contention anywhere.
I give him a lot of credit for last year. I mean, they were.
Yeah.
It was the 3-point loss at USC, a game like incredibly winnable, and then having to play in a snow globe against Washington in the Apple Cup. Like that was last year was a team that could have were they going to go to the college football playoff at 12-0?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, that could have been a college football playoff team. That would have been like the greatest season in Washington State history.
But see, that plays into what Mike Leach's ceiling is, though, in the fact that his style of play, if it's a bad weather day, his team's in a lot of trouble. And when you play, in the Pacific Northwest, there's, especially late in the season, there's going to be bad weather days. I feel like if Mike Leach played somewhere like in Southern California, if he was coaching, at UCLA even, I think that he could have a lot more success because he wouldn't have to worry about snow or rain destroying his offense because his program is so reliant on his offense that, the weather can kill his team. And we saw that last year against Washington. Not to say that they beat the Huskies on a, sunny 65-degree day, but that team clearly had no answer for that snowstorm. Whereas Washington, when that snow comes, they have stuff they can do. Washington mm-hmm. State doesn't.
Yeah, that last year was an instructive year for me. I picked Washington on the under on the win total, or Washington State on the under on the win total. And I just think you just assume that Mike Leach, who basically functions as like a computer as a coach, is just going to stick around he's going to insert the new pieces and figure out a way to get to 8 wins just about every season. So
I mean, it wasn't just you. Washington State was picked 5th in the division at Pac-12 Media Days, only ahead of Oregon State.
And if you look at going into last year, they lost Luke Falk, who'd been their QB forever. And then this dude taking over was somebody nobody had ever heard of, who was a transfer from East Carolina, who was, or from Alabama, technically. So it's like there were plenty of reasons to be skeptical. And then Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator that we gave so much credit for turning that defense around, had left. So it's like going into last year, there were plenty of reasons to think that Washington State was going to have a step back. And the fact that they didn't is why Mike Leach is finishing as high as he is in our rankings, in ours and both the consensus. But like Barton said, there is a ceiling there.
You know who's number one in my rankings? You guys.
Aww.
Make sure you can check out the entire 1-65 at cbssports.com. And if you want to yell at us about our opinions or about our rankings, you can reach all of us at Tom Fornelli. That's at TomFornelli. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, this has been fun. Thank you very much.
You perfect.